Tasyaravinda Nayanasya Padaravinda.
Tasyaravinda Nayanasya Padaravinda.
Kinjal Kamisya Tulasi Makaranda Vayu.
Kinjal Kamisya Tulasi Makaranda Vayu.
Antargata Swavivarena Chakaratesham. Sankshobhamakshara Jusama Pichitta Tanvo. When the breeze carrying the aroma of tulsi leaves from the toes of the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead entered the nostrils of those sages, they experienced a change both in body and in mind, even though they were attached to the impersonal Brahman understanding. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. It appears from this verse that the four Kumaras were impersonalists or protagonists of the philosophy of monism, becoming one with the Lord. But as soon as they saw the Lord's features, their minds changed. In other words, the impersonalist who feels transcendental pleasure in striving to become one with the Lord is defeated when he sees the beautiful transcendental features of the Lord. Because of the fragrance of his lotus feet, carried by the air, and mixed with the aroma of tulsi, their minds changed. Instead of becoming one with the Supreme Lord, they thought it wise to be devotees. Becoming a servitor of the lotus feet of the Lord is better than becoming one with the Lord. This morning, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. This verse is a very important instruction. It is a verse that is quoted profusely by the great Vaishnava Acharyas of all of the sampradayas. The four Kumaras were liberated souls. Their position is very, very prominent within the Vedic literatures. They were born directly from the mind of Lord Brahma at the very beginning of the universal creation. In fact, they are the elder brothers of Narada Muni, Lord Shiva, so many other, in fact, all of us, everyone. When they were born from the mind of Brahma, due to the mercy of the Supreme Lord, they were already in such a liberated state of consciousness. They were such great yogis that they could live throughout the entire span of Brahma's life. And they could live in any form that they want. They decided that the way Brahma has created, as soon as you attain a certain age, all kinds of sensual desires awaken within the heart, like a great storm.
The Bhagavat explains, Pungshastriya Maituni Bhava Metam Tayormito Hritaya Granti Mahu, Atogri Hakshetra Sudapti Vitaya, Janasya Mohoya Mahamameti.
That in this entire cosmic manifestation, the basic principle of all bondage is the attraction between the sexes. This sex desire is all powerful. The Shastras call this world Maituna Agara, where everyone is shackled by this desire for sex life. And Srila Prabhupada explained the definition of liberation. When you have no more sex desire, you are liberated. To the degree we have sex desire, to that degree, we are in bondage. And sex desire is grosser than anything that can be gross and subtler than anything that can be subtle. On the gross level, the five senses are aspiring for such a pleasure. And on the subtle level, profit, adoration, and distinction are bondage caused by that same seed of sexual desire. The great sages declare that there are three greatest dangers for anyone on the spiritual path, especially those in the renounced order of life. Kanaka, Pratishta, Kamini. Kanaka means wealth. Attachment to wealth is very powerful. It has distracted so many people from the path of devotion. And the beauty of the opposite sex is also a very, very powerful force of Maya, all powerful. And the next, which is even more difficult, is Pratishta, which is desire for recognition and distinction. Even great personalities who live perfectly celibate without any attraction to the opposite sex, and who have given up all wealth and luxuries of this world to live very simple lives in poverty, even they usually fall victim to pratishta, to false pride. When we are worshipped, when people look up to us and consider us to be something very great, this is a subtle form of sex life. How? Because it brings about this desire that I am the enjoyer, that I am attractive. And real renunciation means to have the conviction that Krishna is the only enjoyer and Krishna is all attractive. So Kanaka, Kamini, and Pratishta are the three principles of Maya that trick us into the misconception that I am the enjoyer, that I have the position that is exclusively ordained by Krishna for himself. Krishna says, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, I am the proprietor of everything that exists. So how much we are mad to be the proprietor of something. And Maya seduces us through this false sense of proprietorship. The king is very much attached to the proprietorship of his palace. And sometimes even the sadhu is attached to his begging pot or his kopin. This is mine. It is an illusion. Nothing is ours. Everything is the property of the Lord. And when one takes to the path of simplicity, renunciation, and devotion, whether one is a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, or sannyas, the path to go back to the spiritual world is the same. We have to give up all sense of proprietorship and understand everything is the property of the Lord. Srila Rupa Goswami has described the principle of Yukta Vairagya. If everything is the property of the Lord, nothing should be rejected, but everything should be used in the service of the Lord. That is the perfect understanding of renunciation. Grihe thako, vane thako, sada hari bole thako. Whether one is living in the renounced order in the forest, or whether one is living home with wife and family, if one understands and lives by this principle, one can achieve the ultimate perfection of life. However, we must be very, very careful. Why? Because Maya uses the articles of this world to seduce us, to attract us, to somehow or other give in to her illusion that this is mine. And sometimes we can live very simple, but then wealth starts coming and we become infatuated by that. That has been the downfall of many, many great souls. It is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam that Maharaj Parikshit, he defeated Kali. Kali was trying to harm an innocent cow and bull by destroying the four principles of religion. Maharaj Parikshit took swift action to punish this rascal who was about to take the life of Kali. Kali surrendered. Now I have surrendered to you. You must give me some place to reside. Wherever there is illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and the slaughter of animals and the eating of their flesh, there you are the king. There you are the controller. Kali said, as long as you're king, these four sinful activities cannot exist. You must give me some place. Wherever there is hoarding to the attachment of gold, that is your abode. That means wealth, money. Wherever there is the hoarding of money and attachment, Kali is the king. And whoever is engaged in these activities are the puppets who are subject to the influence of Maya. So as we make advancement in the spiritual path, sometimes these things come. Maybe a little, maybe a lot. We have to be very, very scrutinizingly careful examining our own intentions to make sure we do not get attached to these things or think I am the proprietor. Because the more we own, the more we think we own, the more we fall into the inevitable misconception that I am the controller. I have this much I can control. And it's a fever. The more you control, the more you want to control. The more you have to control. The more you desperately must control. Just as lust burns like fire, and the more you feed it, the more you have to have. Similarly, this false sense of proprietorship makes one feel that I am the controller. Even those in the mode of goodness or sattva-guna, if it is not completely pure, if it is tinged with rajaguna or tamaguna, even when we give charity with our wealth, we are thinking, the people I am giving are depending on me. I am their Lord. So many people are coming with folded palms to beg benefits from me, and I am supplying. Ultimately, Krishna is the supplier of everything. But it is very difficult to have a position where people are looking up to you as they look up to God without being overcome by that ego. So this is Kanaka, very dangerous situation. Whoever we are, we must be very, very careful to always cultivate the spirit of a humble servant. Great, great kings like Maharaj Prataparudra, he had wife, he had children, but he understood everything is the property of the Lord. He didn't consider even one grain of sand to be his own. He used everything for Krishna's service. And similarly, Sri Sanatana Goswami, even when beautiful temple was being built for Madan Mohan, he understood it as all Krishna's. And he remained sleeping under a tree, different tree every night. Why different tree every night? Several reasons. Because every tree in Vrindavan is a variegated place to experience the transcendental mood of Krishna's Leela. There's different pastimes taking place under each tree. However, to set an example, he didn't want anyone to be under the misconception that he was even attached to a tree. He would renounce it after one night sleeping. And then there is Kamini. We don't have to describe too much to convince you. You're all living in this world. You know what it is all about. Very, very difficult situation. Even the great Vishwamitra Muni, such a yogi, he had such control over his senses and mind, he was practically controlling the universe. But just the tinkling of the bangles of Menaka, and his mind was infatuated. So one must be very, very careful. And Pratishtha, even after giving up all wealth and all the beautiful pleasures of this world, the ego that I am renounced, that I am great, that I am better than you, will be the cause of your fall down. We have often told the story of Ramanujacharya when his brahmacharis were criticizing Dhanurdas. He was a grihastha with a beautiful wife, too much beautiful wife. And he was a very strong, handsome man. And he lived a nice life. But Ramanujacharya was always showing him such special affection, even more than the brahmacharis. So the brahmacharis were thinking, what is this nonsense? What is our Guru Maharaj trying to do? Doesn't he understand? This man is attached to woman, attached to house, attached to wealth. And we are so renounced, he should be giving me all his attention. Why is he doing like this? So they were criticizing. So Ramanujacharya decided to teach them a good lesson, because it is the Guru's duty to train the disciple so that the disciple will go back to Godhead, not remain in this life as a brahmachari in this material world. So he had it arranged that one night when the brahmacharis were sleeping, someone made little tears in the kopins of the brahmacharis. So when they woke up, they started accusing each other. Why did you tear my kopan? No, no, you tore my kopan. This is my kopan. And they were fighting. So Ramanujacharya called them in and said, you know this Dhanardas, he's too much attached to material life. They said, yes, yes, correct. It has been revealed. He said, let us watch and see what kind of attachment he has. So in the middle of the night, they called him to Ramanujacharya, and the brahmacharis went to steal the jewels off his sleeping wife because they wanted to see how much misery he would be in when her jewels were stolen. The jewels are very valuable for two reasons. One is they cost a lot of money, and two is they give more pleasure to how I see my wife when she's decorated like this. So they went and she was sleeping, and they took all the jewels off one side, and she was pretending to sleep. Then she turned over and they got scared and they ran away. So Dhanardas came back. She said, you know, our Guru Maharaj, his brahmacharis must be very, very poor. They must be in great need of money because they're such great souls. But they came here to collect my jewels. They took everything. From one side, Dhanardas said, well, why is there still jewels on the other side? The brahmacharis were watching through the window to see. She said, well, I turned over so that they could take the other side, but they got scared and ran away. Dhanardas chastised her. What nonsense. We had a chance to give everything to our Guru Maharaj, and you spoiled everything by the way you turned over incorrectly. Everything belongs to our Guru Maharaj. The brahmacharis were very embarrassed. They came back and told Ramanujacharya, this is what happened. He said, aha, and you're so attached to your kopans, who's more renounced? So we should understand that real detachment is the quality of how we actually use everything in Krishna's service. But the pratishtha, the good name and fame that we gain, we should understand it all belongs to Krishna. If in any way, shape, or form we think that I am the cause of the results of my activities, we are actually in a fallen state of consciousness. We may learn the scriptures. The scriptures talk all about renunciation, and we can quote one lakh of verses about renunciation. But if we think that I am the knower and I am better than someone who doesn't know all these verses, then we haven't understood a word of them. You can tape record the shastras and they can speak everything perfectly. But realization comes through our practical application of what we read and study. So as soon as we think we're better than anyone else, then we are in a fallen state. Kaviraj Goswami considered himself lower than the worm and stool, more sinful than Jagai and Madhai. That is renunciation. That is pure consciousness. So one may think, that how is it that we cannot think that we're better than someone else? What about someone who's a criminal, who's addicted to eating meat, addicted to illicit sex, addicted to intoxication, addicting to gambling, causing harm to other living beings, even killing? I'm not better than him. I'm chanting 16 rounds, following the four regulative principles, and dancing with the devotees in front of Gopinath. No, you are not better than him. You are more fortunate than him. Mercy, causeless mercy of Krishna has come down to you, and by accepting that mercy, you have become fortunate. But if you didn't get that mercy, what would be the difference between you and him? You would probably be worse. That is the way a devotee thinks. So we should not compare and think ourselves better than anyone. In Vaishnava society, this is the beauty that attracts Krishna. When all different Vaishnavas think themselves lower than all other Vaishnavas and are trying to serve them. But as soon as there's the ego that I am better than you, if a senior brahmachari thinks I am better than a junior brahmachari, that means he is fallen state of consciousness. Maybe I have been given a good fortune, but it is not mine. The fortune is not mine. The fortune is Krishna's, coming through parampara. I am just blessed by it. And whatever position I have is only due to that blessing. So everyone is in the mood of service. If the brahmacharis think I am better than grihasthas, look at how they are enjoying. I don't enjoy like that. They sleep on bed and I sleep on the floor. They wear that pale, obnoxious white color and I am in brilliant effulgent saffron. Look at my shining shaved head and look at all those gross hairs, the sign of attachments growing out of their skulls. And I own nothing, and they have property, they live in house. They have so many things. And I only embrace other brahmacharis. Who do they embrace? In this way, I am superior. They are contaminated. Don't even look at them. Don't talk about them. Or you may catch this contagious disease. And then the grihasthas, they look at the brahmacharis. What are these useless, lazy bums doing? They're coming to me for scraps of food for their survival. If I do not feed them by giving donations, they will die. Why don't they just get jobs and be qualified, responsible people in society? What do they do all day? They sleep, they eat. And just to get their next chapati, they chant their 16 rounds. They think they're so great. I'm working 9 hours a day, supporting a family, paying my taxes. Parasites, that's what they are. So this kind of mentality of I am superior is a fallen state of consciousness. Nations. If you're born in Pakistan, you think Pakistan is so great. If you're born in India, you think, I am an Aryan. Everyone else is Malechas and Yavanas. But if you're born in America, you think the whole world is backward, uncivilized. Everyone has the false pride. Men are thinking, I am the superior sex. And the women are knowing that I am controlling the superior sex. So in this way, everyone has this false sense of ego. Real renunciation is to understand that I am the servant. I am not better than anyone. I am not the controller or master of anyone. I am Das, 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 Anu Das. This is liberated state. So the four Kumaras, they actually had achieved such a liberated state. And to not become entangled, they decided by their own free will that let us never, they discussed amongst themselves, obviously, and decided amongst the four of us, let us never grow older than 5 years. Hare Krishna. 4 or 5 years old. A 4 or 5 year old child never has to deal with the attraction of the opposite sex, never has to think about the entanglements of life. They didn't even wear clothes. This is how renounced they were. They live for billions of years without clothes as 5 year old children. And they have no home or place of residence. They're constantly traveling here and there. They were perfectly Brahman realized. Brahma Bhuta Prasana Atmana Sochati Nakankshati. They had attained the state of Brahma Bhuta. They hankered for nothing, they lamented for nothing. And when their father, Lord Brahma, ordered them, you get married, you be Prajapati, you procreate the universe with all kinds of population. And when Brahma offers that, it's no small thing. What type of beautiful consort will Brahma create for the Kumaras? It's not that he had to put an ad in the paper to find a wife. The most beautiful, most qualified, chaste, faithful wife would have been given to them. No. Plus he would have given them a beautiful home, everything. What was their renunciation? They gave everything up for this pleasure of Brahman realization. Abrahma bhuvanar loka punar avartan arjuna mamo pejata kaunteya punar janmana vidyate. From the highest planet in this world down to the lowest, they are all places of misery because they are places of birth and death. All the pleasures of this entire material creation, all of them do not compare to even a drop in the ocean of Brahman realization. When we realize that we are not this body, when we realize that we are the spiritual light beyond this cosmic manifestation, feeling oneself one with the Supreme Absolute Truth. Because of the negation of all material attachment, that pleasure is something that can never even be imagined with our material mind and senses. So the Kumaras were perfectly living in that state of consciousness. When they came to Vaikuntha, they wanted to see Lord Narayan. Ultimately, they were devotees. Otherwise, why would they be coming to see Lord Narayan? However, they were immersed in the liberated state of Brahman realization. When the Lord came before them, just by seeing the beauty of his face, a breeze, a Vaikuntha breeze, passed over the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord Narayan, which were decorated with fragrant tulsi leaves. That breeze carried the fragrance of the feet of the Lord and the tulsi leaves into the nostrils of the four Kumaras. Within a moment, just by smelling the fragrance of tulsi and Krishna's feet, immediately they experienced such an ecstatic pleasure that they completely forgot about. In fact, they rejected their Brahman realization. Rupa Goswami explains that the pleasure of Brahman liberation is not even a particle of a drop compared to the unlimited ocean of pleasure that one experiences when one engages in pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord. It is the ultimate liberation. Impersonal realization is the negation of the sufferings of this world. However, the positive pleasures of the spiritual realm can only be tasted through the process of bhakti or devotional service. Artha kama dhamma moksha. These four principles are the goal of most people who follow religious principles. They want economic development, sense gratification, religiosity, and ultimately mukti or liberation. However, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, citing from the scriptures, explained that pure love of God, Krishna Prema, is Purushartha Shiromani. It is the crest jewels of all goals of life. Prema Pumartha Mahan, it is the ultimate aspiration for an intelligent person. Love for Krishna. Nothing else can compare. Maya will present so many alternatives. However, a devotee whose mind is fixed in the conclusions of the scriptures will settle for nothing less than pure unalloyed love for Krishna. Savai pungshang poro dharmo yato bhaktiradhokshachi ahoitiki aprati hata yayatma supraseedati. The ultimate purpose of all human life is to achieve that unalloyed devotion. When love for Krishna is not in any way conditional, when it is unconditional, then it completely satisfies our heart. Unmotivated and uninterrupted, that is the goal of a devotee. Nothing of this world. We will live and perform our duties carefully according to our varna and ashram, but our goal is simply that unmotivated, uninterrupted, loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because ultimately nothing else is real. Nothing else can give real satisfaction to our soul. So we find here the most classic illustration of the supremacy of pure devotional service over all other paths and realizations. The four Kumaras, although for long, long time they were immersed in the ecstasy of Brahman, just in 1 second, just by seeing the Lord for a moment and smelling the fragrance of his lotus feet, they surrender their lives in the mood of the servant of the servant of the servant of his servants. And after this realization, from that point on, all they could do is chant the glories of bhakti. They formed their own sampradaya, the Kumar Sampradaya, of whom Srila Nimbarkacharya, they personally initiated in Srinavadvip Dham. They personally revealed the truths. And throughout the great scriptures, we find so many great personalities being enlightened by the four Kumaras and the path of pure devotional service. How fortunate we are that even in our present state of material conditioning, by Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya's mercy, we are being given the opportunity to come before the beautiful forms of the Lord. Every day, just at the doorway, is a wonderful little pot of Charanamrit, the nectar of the lotus feet of the Lord, and within it are so many tulsi leaves. Each and every one of us, it's a regulative principle of devotional service to take this Charanamrit. It's very purifying. When we're drinking the Charanamrit, we are actually drinking the nectar that has washed the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The four Kumaras just smelled it. We can smell it, we could drink it. What fortune. But yet, even after drinking pots and pots of it, and eating forests of tulsi leaves, still, I have this false ego and material desires. What's happening? The reason is we are not as receptive as the four Kumaras. They were so very receptive to accept the mercy of the Lord. And they were not offensive. They were offenseless. They were like children. So when we become very simple and offenseless, and we become so eager for the mercy of the Lord, then one drop of Charanamrit will transform us into a state of transcendental bliss. What to speak of dancing before the beautiful forms of Sri Radha Gopinath amongst so many jubilant devotees chanting their holy names. Let us be very careful to guard against the dangers that are on the path of devotional service. And we must hear Srimad Bhagavatam every day. It is essential. Unless we are continuously reminded and convinced that only bhakti is true wealth. It is the only aspiration worth living for. We will be distracted by the multifaceted ways of Maya. This beautiful verse from the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam was often quoted by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sanatan Goswami asked Lord Chaitanya to explain the Atmarama verse. The Atmarama verse describes how even a great personality in the liberated state who is self-satisfied is attracted to pure devotional service. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he converted even the thousands and thousands of disciples along with their guru Prakashananda Saraswati in Varanasi. These men were actually, they were real Mayavadis. Today there's so many pseudo-Mayavadis. They talk all kinds of word jugglery. But Prakashananda Saraswati and his disciples, they were actually liberated souls. They were powerful, learned. They were so much learned in the scriptures. Deeply absorbed in meditation. They actually had realization of Brahman, not just so much talk. And they were living in this happiness, so-called happiness. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came and sat down after washing his feet in the place where everyone washed their feet, a dirty place. Prakashananda Saraswati and his devotees were on a raised platform with their dandas, ekadandas, discussing the monistic conclusions. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his beauty was so much. He just emanated light from his beautiful body. Immediately, these Mayavadis, who were so highly realized in Brahman realization, they became so attracted by his beautiful effulgent and the source of the effulgent, his golden form, that their hearts began to melt. Swamiji, please come and sit with us while you are sitting in that dirty place. Are you lamenting over something? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so humble. He was not trying to show himself to be big, big sannyasi. He said that I am from a lower order of sannyas than you. I am not qualified to sit amongst you. I am very lowly. I have no right to sit on a high platform with such great personalities. His humility melted their hearts even more. Prakashananda Saraswati came down off of his raised platform and took Lord Chaitanya by the hand to bring him up. Because he was so attracted to the beauty of the Lord, he performed this service not knowing who the Lord was. And because he engaged in some act of service, his spiritual life on the path of bhakti was confirmed. They asked him, why? Why are you not with us? You have taken sannyas in the illustrious Bharati Sampradaya of Shankaracharya. Why are you disgracing our Sampradaya by associating with all these low-class people and you're dancing and chanting with fanatics? It is your first and only duty to study Vedanta and meditate amongst other sannyasis. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained, my Guru Maharaj told me that you are a fool. You cannot understand Vedanta.
You should just chant the holy names of Krishna. All the conclusions of all the scriptures can be understood by offenselessly chanting the holy name. So since then, I'm simply chanting. But when I started chanting, I became like a madman. It was very much confusing. Tears were flowing from my eyes, my limbs were trembling, hairs were standing on end. I couldn't do anything but chant. I approached my Guru Maharaj and asked, "What's happening to me?" He said, "Very good, my child. I am very pleased you have achieved the ultimate goal of life, love for Krishna. Now you go on with this chanting in the association of devotees and deliver the whole world by spreading this message of Harinam Sankirtan." And then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had a beautiful debate with the Mayavadi sannyasis, and he explained these verses, how even the four Kumaras, who were the crest jewel perfection of all those who attained liberation, they gave it up in a moment after experiencing the ecstasy of smelling the aroma of the lotus feet of the Lord and seeing his beautiful smiling face. The sannyasis understood this was true. Similarly, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya also was converted by hearing this philosophy. He was also a great liberated scholar. So the four Kumaras are setting such a very, very essential, important standard for all of us to understand, that there is no more precious attainment in all of creation than the opportunity to serve the Lord and his devotees. Thank you very much. Is there any questions? Yes, Srinathji Prabhu.
Srila Prabhupada says, Krishna, Krishna's form, Krishna's pastimes, paraphernalia, etc., are not different, they're absolute. So this tulsi leaves and the aroma, would it form part of Krishna's paraphernalia or?
Yes. Tulsi is Krishna's devotee. Devotees are the most sacred paraphernalia of the Lord. Yes.
As you said, the Kumaras were very receptive to receive the blessing of the Lord. And we are not receptive, that's why we are not receiving the blessings. What is the meaning of exactly being receptive?
When we have material attachments, our mind is distracted by those attachments. The Kumaras had no material attachments. We chant the holy names, but we also live a life following the regulative principles, avoiding offenses. We live a life in such a way to bring down the fever of material attachments. To the degree our mind can be fixed on receiving the mercy of the Lord, to that degree we benefit. But to the degree we have material attachments, we cannot fix our mind on the smell of the tulsi leaves, on the taste of prasad, on the holy name. Thank you. Bhagavad Gita explains, Bhogaishwarya Prasaktanam, that one whose mind is too much attached to material opulence and sense gratification, the resolute determination for devotional service does not take place. So when we are detached from material enjoyment and eager for devotional service, then we are really receptive. So this is our lifetime work. Tusaima Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught these three principles. Vairagya means detachment from material existence, enjoyment. Knowledge, to be convinced and very much fixed in our purpose at all times. When we have this Vairagya and Vidya, then when we perform devotion, bhakti, it awakens the latent nature of our soul. So we should be eager to hear, and we should also be very much determined to not engage in sense enjoyment. To the degree we are eager to hear, eager to chant, eager to serve, and very much determined not to engage in sense gratification, to that degree we will be receptive to receive the mercy. Yes. He should read it. Why should I read it? Hari Bol.
Hari Bol Maharaj, in this verses, as we know that the four Kumaras were Brahmavadis, but there are some verses before this verse where it has been said that when the four Kumaras wanted to meet the Lord, they were so eager to meet the Lord that they crossed all the six gates very fast without caring for anybody. So when they are Brahmavadis, how that eagerness has come to see the Lord? Because they are Brahmavadis. And once they see the Lord, it has been mentioned that they were Brahmavadis and they became a devotees. But seeing that eagerness to see the Lord, that itself proves that they were devotees. So how these two things are getting?
They were devotees, I have no doubt, in that sense. But they were not situated in pure devotional service. They were situated in Brahman realization. But however, when they tasted the nectar of Krishna by his beautiful sight and by that fragrance, they completely forgot their Brahman realization. In that sense, they were devotees. However, the ecstasy that they were feeling was not from devotion, it was from their Brahman realization.
The second point which Maharaj, I am not able to understand.
But they completely rejected that Brahman realization as soon as they tasted a drop of the nectar of bhakti. That is the principle.
So Maharaj, when he has not reached to that platform, then how they can get entry into Vaikuntha Loka?
They were at the gate of Vaikuntha.
Maharaj, they have seen Narayan.
Huh?
They have seen the personal form of Narayan when they were in a Brahmavadi platform.
They were not Mayavadis. They were purely liberated on the level of mukti. But still they were eager to see the Lord. Yes.
Is it true that the Mayavadis, because they are offensive to the Lord, they can never become liberated and they are sent to a lower destination?
They can only be liberated if they are receptive to the mercy of a Vaishnava. Just like Srinathji Prabhu. He was a Mayavadi. He was a follower of one of the famous chief Mayavadis. but then he met Srila Prabhupada. It was something like the fragrance of the tulsi leaves from Lord Narayan in his nose. He saw the beautiful form of Srila Prabhupada. He heard him speaking. He argued with him. But Srila Prabhupada so compassionately explained, just as Lord Chaitanya explained to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And now Srinathji is coming and leading Guru Puja. Sri Radha Gopinath's temple. And how he leads. When he was chanting, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Guru Deva. I think even the living entities in the Brahma Jyoti must have been dancing. So much bhakti, so much devotion, because he had received the mercy of a Vaishnava and he opened his heart. So that is the only hope for anyone. However, if one does not receive that mercy, and one continues to offend the Lord and his devotees, then it is a very unpalatable situation. They may achieve Brahman realization, but for a devotee, that is a very low place. What is that verse? Aruya Krishna Param Padam Tatha. That for a devotee, this liberated state is worse than hell. Kaivalya Narakayate. Prabodhananda Saraswati explained. Kaivalya Narakayate. That Kaivalya, the impersonal liberation, which is glorified and worshipped by so many, it is worse than being in hell. Because in that impersonal state, where we lose consciousness of our identity, there's no possibility of devotional service. In hell, I can serve the Lord. But in the state of impersonal mukti, there can be no service. So it is considered worse than hell by a bhakta. Haridas Thakur was praying. He was giving a beautiful lecture at the assembly of Hiranya and Govardhan Majumdar. He was saying, mukti, which is so much strive for by most classes of transcendentalists in this world. Lifetimes of austerities, lifetimes of studying knowledge, just by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. When the chanting just comes at the verge of being offenseless, nambas, automatically one gets liberation. But that's not the goal. That's just an insignificant byproduct. Just like when the sun is rising, before you actually see the sun on the horizon, there is light. Then the sun comes to give light to everything. So similarly, even before our chanting is pure, we get liberated. Liberated from all material entanglement, from the repetition of birth and death. However, love of God, that is the real goal. And impersonal liberation and any type of liberation is just an insignificant byproduct which a devotee doesn't even concern himself with. Dilvamangala Thakur explains that since I've been serving the Supreme Lord, Shyam Sundar, Mukti Devi is standing at my doorway with folded hands ready to serve me, and I do not even look upon her. That is the glory of devotional service. Yes, Srinath Ji Prabhu?
Is Is it true, Maharaj, that Brahma Kumars, these Sanat Sanatan, Sanadana Sanata, they were actually very inquisitive and they wanted to know the source of the Brahman because they were so Brahman attached. And that is why they were able to go or reach near to Narayan, but and that's why they were very keen to see the source of Brahman.
Yes, very good, thank you. Yes.
Is the platform of the four Kumaras the same as is said in this verse, Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma? Is it that consciousness which they are in?
But they achieved the perfection of Brahman when they came in contact with Parabrahman, yes. They engaged in devotional service.
So is the stage of Brahma Bhuta something which a devotee must aspire for in his evolution in Krishna consciousness, or is it something which he comes to automatically and that is attained as a byproduct? Does he have to actually want to be Brahma Bhuta and then want to evolve to pure devotion? Or will he automatically reach there by just what he is already doing?
By engaging in devotional service, automatically that is achieved.
Kesava Bharati, he knew that love of Krishna is the highest perfection. But then even then, why was he preaching the monistic philosophy? The spiritual master of Lord Chaitanya, Kesava Bharati, he knew that love of Krishna is the highest perfection. Then why was he preaching the monistic philosophy?
Kesava Bharati was the sannyas guru of Lord Chaitanya. It is said he was a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. He was actually a great devotee. But he took sannyas at the Sankar Sampradaya because that was the most beneficial, it was the most expedient way for preaching, as Lord Chaitanya also took sannyas in Shankar Sampradaya. However, when Kesava Bharati danced with Lord Chaitanya after the sannyas ceremony, he achieved the ultimate perfection of love of God. Shri Gauranga Mahaprabhu ki. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.